Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio. Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League edition, with Aaron William Freeland, Gary Grube, sometimes Jared Harris, and Frank Stanishi. Tonight, we have a special guest. His name is Rocco Joseph Granato from the home of brotherly love. He's also an on-air lacrosse voice of the Philadelphia Wings. He's a spit take from Broad Street. And Rocco Joseph Granato also has a Twitter handle at ThunderLax77. And he is a guest on our show tonight. And Rocco, welcome to the program. I should turn your mic on, Rocco. What do you think? I turned it off and turned it on again. Anyway, welcome to the program. You're
Thanks
there, right?
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Real quick, the Twitter handle, get rid of the ThunderLax. It's at Wings Fanatic.
Oh, you changed it.
It's always been at Wings Fanatic. I used the ThunderLax for when I covered the Langley Thunder.
Oh, okay. At Wings...
Wings Fanatic.
Wings Fanatic, okay.
Yeah.
So...
With a PH, yeah.
Okay, like Philly.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So you're into KFC then?
No.
Well, not those kind of wings?
No.
Not those kind of hot wings?
Oh, no, no. I'm into the hot wings, but it's more towards the Philadelphia wings.
There you go. And also with us tonight is Aaron William Freeland. Hello, Aaron.
Hey, Frank. Hey, Rocco. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Excellent.
Gary Grube can't be on tonight. He's a little under the weather. You know, the weather's been pretty horrible out there. I'm actually in the midst of an adventure with health being an issue. And regardless of that, the shoe must go on, as they used to say in the Ed Sullivan days. So first of all, I guess, let's find out who we're talking to here. Rocco, what got you involved in lacrosse? I see that you have the same problem, or do you have the same? It looked like you had the same problem. I posted your picture. It looks like you wear goalie equipment. Is that what I saw?
No.
Okay. So you're a defender or a forward?
I play wherever needed. Aaron can tell you that. We play together in the summer during when we play our charity tournament every year.
Ah, okay.
He's a utility player. He's awesome.
Everybody's a utility player in that.
And what's your nickname? Because I'm always enthralled and amazed by Aaron's nickname, Meathead. You know, throwback
to... Well, believe it or not, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, that used to be my nickname, Meathead.
We're everywhere.
Yeah, my uncle gave me that name. Oh, God, I'm 48 now. Gave me that name well over 40 years ago.
And it came about because you lost a lot of fights?
No, just some of the stupid stuff I used to do.
Okay, so it's the All in the Family reference.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, so when did you first get involved in lacrosse and how?
28 years ago when the Philadelphia Wings started playing. I went to a game just, you know, to see what it was like. First game I went to, fell in love with it, and ever since then I've been a season ticket holder.
And what attracted you so much to the game?
The fast pace, the hitting. It's just nonstop action up and back, and that's what they like in Philadelphia. They like to have... The nonstop action going up and down. It's a combination of, you know, with hockey. You combine hockey with football and basketball all together there. You have the shot clock, which simulates it to basketball. The contact, the way it is, it's a lot rougher than hockey. And it's just, you know, contact, constant contact, nonstop. And that's what's, you know, keeps everybody interested in that game.
It just doesn't seem to apply to the Flyers, though.
Tonight it does. They're winning 2-0.
It's true. Not before tonight.
No.
They've been almost as good as the Leafs.
The Flyers have always had a up until recently. Actually, they don't have the same physical edge they used to have back in the day in the early 70s when they won those cups and going through the 70s. They're a little more of a finesse team than a tough team now.
Yeah, they went too much European.
Yeah. They were the last to bring in Europeans. But let's get to the lacrosse. And with lacrosse, yes, it's fast-paced. The constant, I had fun at the last game I was at with The Rock, and I love yelling, hack and slash, white. And that's something that in most sports isn't allowed, and that is, trying to hurt your opponent. Even though they're wearing equipment, it does get pretty busy on the arms, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, from what you could see, the way they're just hitting each other and the bruises they come up with, it's just you wonder how they're not breaking arms or breaking legs with the way they're hitting. But when you see how they're padded up from top to bottom, it's just okay. Then there's no way you can kind of penetrate that unless you take like a baseball swing at them.
And there is slashing in lacrosse. There is a slashing penalty. Usually in an area where there is no protection and it's off limits.
Not even that. I think it goes by where you're bringing back your stick and how you're coming down with it.
Okay.
I've seen slashing calls where a guy gets hit on top of the gloves.
Mm-hmm.
If you're kind of bringing it back, let's say like past your hip. And coming forward with it in a violent manner.
The way to describe it would be you could chop. You can't take a baseball swing.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. So, but still, it doesn't look like fun being the victim of that kind of attention. And then you've got a ball that literally moves very quickly, not only when it's in the net or in the stick, but when it hits the ground, the reaction time required. I mean, there's not much time. From the time a shot is taken, even if it isn't on net, within a split second, it's in somebody else's stick again, and they're starting over.
Yeah, if you have slow reflexes, indoor lacrosse is not the game for you.
No way. Not at all. Okay, tell us some of the programs that you're part of. We were talking off the air about some of the stuff that you do, and you're obviously a big Wings fan.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing a radio show for 3 years now. It's just my way of kind of giving back to the game. I mean, for 28 years, I've seen the good, bad, and ugly in the league, and especially with the Wings. I mean, I've seen them win 6 titles. I've seen them lose title games. I've seen them have seasons that you just want to forget at times. And it's like I always say, it's one big family in the league. You know, we can go up to Toronto, we can go up to Buffalo, we can go to Rochester. We'll boo the hell out of your team and we'll yell things back and forth. But when it's all over with, we're up at the bar together having a beer.
That is the difference between lacrosse and other sports. The fans get together and, they really do enjoy each other. As well as their team and their games. You were talking about the charitable stuff you do. You've got the Fan Cup, I guess you take part in as well?
Yes. I started playing myself back in, I think 2006 was my first year actually playing in it. I've never played it in high school, never played it in college or anything like that. It just looked like something fun to do to raise money, which is always good, good to do. And you get together with everybody that you're friends with throughout, the year. I mean, this coming weekend, me and my family, we're going up to Rochester to watch our Wings play against the Nighthawks. So we're going to get together with some of our Rochester friends, and some people from Buffalo might come down after their home game and for the after party or, what have you. And we all, get together. Me, Aaron, I mean, we play on the same team. So we, have, fun. Some of us play for 2 or 3 teams.
Oh, okay.
So it's just, you all get together, you play. It's really non-contact in the charity event that we play in. There's a little bit of pushing here and there, but nothing like you see out on the floor every weekend.
That's more ball control.
Yeah, but if you want to call it that.
Okay.
Well, like,
okay. Attempt.
We're all pretty creepy.
Attempt ball control, yeah.
But, ball control is more acceptable than age.
yeah. Bowel control, a problem. Ball control, not so much.
No.
So at the end of the day, you guys all have fun. You get to know each other, and you get to root for your teams. And, you know, because lacrosse is different than a lot of other sports because the players, it's such a tight-knit group. You know, the players are a tight-knit group. It follows that the fans are a tight-knit group. And not only are they tight-knit behind their own team, they're tight-knit behind the game, the league. And so when you see things going well in one city, it doesn't bother you, does it?
No, because the thing is with the indoor game, you know, these guys don't get paid a lot of money. Okay, they don't make the millions of dollars. Right. The highest paid player this year with the new CBA, if they were franchised, they get just over $33,971, I think the figure is, if they were deemed as a franchise player. So they're the highest paid player in the league, just under $34,000.
Right.
And these guys have regular, we'll say, 9-to-5 jobs. Okay, or they stay in town like Kevin Crowley does throughout the season, and he does a lot of public relation work with the Philadelphia Wings, going to schools, talking about the game, and, you know, promoting, you know, the non-bullying things that are going on.
Yep.
And, things of that nature. But they're regular guys. These are guys that will come up, they'll say hello to you, they talk to you, they'll take pictures, sign autographs, they do all that, but they're not what I like to call the million-dollar babies. They're more concerned about the bottom dollar, and that's it. You know, they come up, they acknowledge the fans, they thank the fans, even the opposing players. I mean, as much as we hate Buffalo here, Tavares and Steinhaus, you have to respect the way they play the game, especially Tavares, 23 years in the league, and he's still playing like he's a kid. You know, you hate him when he's on the floor, but after, he's just a regular person, and he always has the time to talk to you.
And that's an important thing. We have our get-togethers here, too, and the players and the fans all eat together. They go to a local bar here. It's known as Joe Badali's. You probably know it because you've probably been there a couple of times.
Yes, I have.
So they have a lot of fun. They get together. They meet the players. They talk to the players, and they hang out. Everybody hangs out at the bar and starts really shooting the breeze, you know, and having a great time. So, in essence, it's more of a community event more than it is a – I don't want to say it isn't a sports event because it is a sports event, but it's one that is shared by all the fans and players together. Now, when you say he only makes franchise player only makes $33,000, it really isn't that bad when you consider how many games they play. They don't play 88 games. So,
right.
You know, if you do some math, it's not bad. A lot of people in this world would love to make that kind of money. But it's not the kind of money elite athletes are accustomed to earning. So these guys are grateful for the opportunity to make some good change. They're even more grateful to have an opportunity to play the game they like at a level that they can play it. I know that from talking to a few guys. That's one of the biggest thrills is to play it at that level because, you know, they're playing it, even though they don't earn that much money, they're playing it at the highest level. There is no level higher, as far
right.
as I know, in the world.
No. And the thing is, each team was able to franchise at the most two players. Some teams didn't franchise any players. Like, for Buffalo, for example, they only franchised one player. That was Johnny Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
The Wings had two. They had Brody Merrill and Brandon Miller. I don't think Vancouver, I may be wrong, but I think Vancouver didn't franchise anybody. So nobody on that team is making that high amount of money. The rookies that come in, I think they're only making maybe $9,000 their first year.
That'd be the ground floor.
Yes. And then, like, between years, for years two and three, it kind of fluctuates depending on their status and, you know, what the maximum for a second-year player can make. And I believe
Did we lose him? I heard a bark and then he was gone.
Yeah, sorry, that's Thora. There's somebody knocking around outside my door that probably shouldn't be there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I don't know. He's still up here. I still see him on the screen. His phone is still up here. We'll carry on with what we usually do. And I explained to Rocco what we do, so he'll be able to jump in when the time comes. And if you want to shoot him a call and or whatever, to let him know that if he's gone.
Yeah, he says he got disconnected. So.
Oh, okay. So then what I'll do is I'll reconnect him.
Here, no worries.
Yeah, no worries at all.
Oh, he'll be happy to know that the Flyers and Capitals got into their second line brawl of the season tonight.
Oh, did they?
Yeah,
and I just finished saying how those days are gone.
Yeah, well, surprise, surprise.
Right?
Guess
what?
Last time I saw line brawl was in Burlington, Vermont.
Oh, yeah?
Canada versus USA women.
Oh. Well, that was a fun situation, I bet.
Yeah, they really don't like each other.
Oh, there's a surprise. There's a surprise.
So
why don't we start with the games that hey, maybe he's back.
Hello?
Hey, Rocco.
Yeah.
We lost disconnected. You for a bit. Yes, we
yeah.
did. Yes, we did. Okay, why don't we carry on and we'll talk about that kind of stuff still. Our last week games began, and Aaron always has to check with me because I can't do the math, and Aaron helps me out. And so Aaron, I guess last week was the 28th?
That's correct.
Okay, so we'll start with the 28th, and it saw a game by Toronto visiting Edmonton at Rexall Place.
Yep.
Toronto lost 11-10 against the Edmonton Rush. Not a great showing on that part, I understand, from you.
Well, this wasn't the game that I was disappointed by. The 11-10 loss, there was a moment right at the end where I kind of scratched my head because Damon Edwards had just intercepted a pass by one of the Edmonton players and was running full tilt back up the floor. He hit center, and John Lovell decided that that was the perfect time, apparently, to call a timeout, killing the play. He wasn't able to get the people that he wanted on the floor in 4.5 seconds. As you know, Rocco, just isn't enough time to put together the scoring play.
Yeah, but when you have a 2-on-1 going down the floor at that
yeah.
point in time, you don't call the timeout. I was sitting here, and I got up. I was like, who to call the timeout?
And then you look over and it's Lovell on the bench making the T sign, and you're going, oh,
yeah.
no.
And, I mean, I love seeing Toronto lose, don't get me wrong. But you don't
Not
call
like
a,
that.
Time, a timeout with a 2-on-1 and the defender backpedaling the whole time.
But
unbelievable.
What are you going to do? I mean, these sorts of things happen. Billings had another breakout game. He had 7 points in that Edmonton game. He had 2 goals and 5 assists. On the other side of the ledger, we're looking at Curtis. Actually, there were quite a few people that came up big for Edmonton. Curtis Knight had 4 points. Riley Lowen had 4. Mark Matthews had 4. Corey Conway had 5. I think he was a rather pleasant surprise. I had him on my fantasy pool. Happy about that. Rose faced 52 shots, let in 42, and then, what are you going to do? I mean, they made it close. They made a fight of it, at least. So I was happy to see that. Unfortunately, we're still on the wrong end when it comes to face-offs. Toronto only managed to win 28% of their draws, and that means, you know, starting off without possession is pretty darn difficult.
It's a big hole that I've been whining about all season, and it's something that I consider is very important. Lacrosse is... We talk about the similarities between lacrosse and basketball. But the difference between basketball and lacrosse, and it's something they want to do in basketball, they want to get rid of the automatic possession after allowing 2 points. In other words, after the team gets a basket, or as they do in lacrosse, when a goal's scored, they go right to the faceoff circle. So you don't give up the ball just because you scored. And it makes it really difficult if you can't win faceoffs or get your share of loose balls.
Yeah, but if they did that here in the NBA in Philadelphia, the Sixers would never get to touch the ball.
Well, I don't know how our Raptors would fare, but I can assure you one thing. In basketball, they probably won't do it because it does put a lot of pressure on the, you know, on the face-off or in the basketball case, you know, your big man being able to have that wonderful reach. You have, you know, you have the big man in the game, and he's going to win the high percentage of those jump balls. So, you know, it isn't a good idea if you don't have a face-off guy, a guy who can at least, you know, keep it at 50%, you know, where you're not losing that much, even 48 or 45. The problem with the Rock and a lot of the teams that don't do well is that they don't get the ball enough possession. It's hard enough to score when you're getting an even possession, but when you're not getting, when you're getting one chance out of the other team's three or four, well, you know, it doesn't matter who you have in goal.
Yeah, but you're talking about getting, you know, winning the face-offs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the leaders, the face-off leaders, okay? Bobby Snyder of the Mammoth, 177 face-off wins. Where are they at in the standings?
Mm-hmm.
They're all the way down in third in the West. Calgary, they're in second in the West, and Snyder's won 171, okay? Jay Thornbear for Buffalo, 121 faceoff wins. They're winning the Eastern Division. They're sitting there, I believe, 6-2, 6-3, right? 6-2, okay? Then you got T.J. Costabile of the Wings and then Tyler Garrison, each with 111, and their teams are basically down at the bottom. But you don't see Jeremy Thompson from Edmonton anywhere in the top five, but yet Edmonton is undefeated at 8-0.
Well, there's more to the game than face-offs.
Right. Yeah, you do get
that extra advantage. Absolutely.
But
there's more to the game than face-offs. First of all, I guess the most important thing is to, you know, to finish your plays, to have finish. All I'm saying is that the problem with the Rock in this case is that they're not getting the ball and they're not able to, you know, put their offense out there. They're always on their heels. So, you know, if you've got a good defense that is tight and able to withstand the pressure of a possession by the other team, yeah, of course, the face-off doesn't mean anything. But the point I'm trying to make is that they don't have a good defense. The problem with the Rock is that they're very susceptible to allowing, bunches of goals. And the only way to end that is to get possession and do something with it. Now, I think they're a better possession team than it shows, and I think the problem is that they're a better possession team than they are a defensive team. And if they lose face-offs, that's a problem. So yeah, it's a combination of things. You know, don't misunderstand me. The answer to all the prayers are not. I'm talking about the Rock and the way they are. I mean, Philly's having a hard time this year. How are they in the face-off circle? And does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Like I said, CJ's won 111 of them. We're, I think, maybe at 50%. Mm-hmm. But our problem's always been in the second quarter. They seem to fall apart in that second quarter, and they try to climb out of that hole, and they just get to the top of the hole, and they get kicked back down. So they need to play.
What is the reason for that? I mean, I think... Aaron, you say the Rock, it's the third quarter is their problem.
Yeah, the third quarter is our Achilles heel. For some reason, we always seem to go brain dead. And
How does this work? How does this work where a team has a difficulty in a particular time in the game?
I'm not sure. I mean, honestly, this is something that's been puzzling me for years. And I think it's a combination of the adrenaline's gone. And, you know, they come out with a surge and they're all hyped and pumped and ready to go and everything like that. And you get into the dressing room for the half and sit down and I don't know what happens. It's like something gets turned off and they're done.
And why is it the second quarter for you guys, Rocco? What is it about the second quarter?
I don't know what it is, but I think maybe they're coming out fast. They're coming out hard in that first quarter. Then you get that long run to the bench in that second quarter. So I don't know if they're just, you know, leaning back or they may have burned themselves out a little bit you know, when they start that second quarter and the other team is pacing themselves and they jump right on it. But they showed three times this year in all their victories, they play 60 hard minutes, they're going to come out with the win. Just
right.
Like they did with the opener against Buffalo, even though the score shows 17-13, Troy Cordingley said they were totally outplayed that game in every aspect. Even though the score looks like it was only a close game at four goals, they were dominated that whole game. They played 60 hard minutes against Vancouver when Vancouver came off a game against the Toronto Rock. And then they played 60 hard minutes up in Minnesota on a back-to-back weekend. So if they could put 60 full minutes together, they could come up with the win. They have the talent for it. And it's just
that
something...
That's the main difference between the teams that do well and the teams that don't. We watched the Rock win a game Saturday before last, and they were ahead like 13-4. The next thing you knew, it was 13-12. You know, I don't know what it is about a team and their ability to keep their foot on the gas. Is it because they're gassed? I don't know. I think it's more of an emotional thing, and I truly believe that there's a leadership lacking. When Philadelphia runs into that hole, it's a lack, in my opinion, just like Toronto, it's a lack of leadership. Either it's lack of leadership on the floor or behind the bench, because it's like you don't become – I don't believe that teams all of a sudden lose it. You know what I mean? There's something causing them – to take a step back, whether they're getting on their heels because they're physically burnt out, whether it's a longer trip to the bench. Either way, once a team gets off their toes and they end up on their heels, they literally, are backing up most of the game. And to change that momentum, once you're on your heels, it's really hard. Right, Rocco?
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying just a little while ago about the game against Minnesota, 13-4 going into the final quarter, and all of a sudden Minnesota puts up an 8 spot. You're watching a game and you wonder, okay, is Toronto just winding the 30-second shot clock down? They're not, didn't look like they were pushing the ball the way they were in the first three quarters. It looks like they said, okay, well, we have this game, in hand right now. Let's just kill 30 off. Let's take our shots. Let's not try to, rush the middle and possibly get hurt or anything like that. But then before you know it, Minnesota got, on a roll.
A good roll, a quick roll.
Yeah, popped in 8 goals. And before you know it, everybody's on the Toronto bench scratching their heads going, okay, we got to do something here.
Yeah, they stopped being aggressive. And once you've got the lead like that, the one thing you can't give up is aggressiveness. You can be aggressive and lay back, but you can't not be aggressive. In other words, you don't have to force them into their corner, but you still got to hack and slash them. You still got to make it hard for them when they get towards your end, and when they've got, a look, you've got to distract them. And the biggest thing in lacrosse, in a novice's opinion, myself, I go back to doing play-by-play of Toronto Beaches here, box lacrosse back in the late 70s and 80s. I go back a little bit. And the one lesson I learned in watching all the games is that the aggressiveness of the players in lacrosse is not just something that's great to watch. It's a requirement. That hack and slash that they're doing, the whole idea of hack and slash is to either, in your end, create a loose ball, or in their end, not give them a clean look. Because these guys can airmail the ball, The pads might be big. I mean, the goalie might look like the Michelin tire man, and the net might look a lot smaller than a hockey net. But, boy, these guys can thread the needle. And if they're allowed to shoot at will, much like that basketball player who's, at a spot around the key, he gets a free look, just like a lacrosse player. The basket's no challenge. The goal and the goalie are not a challenge in lacrosse if you've got a free look. And at that part of the game, Minnesota was getting way too many free looks without any kind of harassment. And you have to, you look at all the good teams, the ones that are playing really well right now, those are the ones that are aggressive and they're harassing, all around the floor. But But I get what you're saying about, you know, playing the clock and such. But still, you can't give the other team a free look. And Minnesota had all kinds of free looks that night. At that point, it was very frustrating, I'm telling you, to watch it happen, you know, and see, you know, it almost looked like it was impossible for Toronto to stop Minnesota. And I don't think it was because they were that great. I think because Toronto literally fell asleep. And that's tough to watch.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it happen here in Philly the following night. You know, the Wings opened up a 7-3 lead on Minnesota in the first quarter. And we're sitting back in our seats going, oh, this is going to be a great game to watch here. You know, Minnesota basically, you could say they battled all the way back, but then, you know, they got to be dead tired by this point. You know, playing a game within 21 hours after battling back in the fourth quarter. Now we just put a 7th spot on them in the first 15 minutes. But then all of a sudden, the second quarter, it wasn't, you know, a bad quarter. They outscored us, I think, 3-2. And then the third quarter, it was like 2-1 they outscored. So they kind of chipped away by one goal that quarter, one goal the next. And then all of a sudden, the last quarter, they outscored us 5-2. We went from having a 2-goal lead to being down by 2 goals within a matter of 6 minutes.
That
and you sit there going, what happened?
That had to be tough.
It was, especially with 3 of those goals in a row.
Hello?
I think we may have lost him again.
Ooh, my goodness.
This seems to be a consistent trend.
Yeah. All right, well, so I guess I'll close out his phone.
Yeah, it looks like there may be an issue with BTR.
Really?
I'm thinking so.
Well, I called you.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's because, you know, I was the first person you called.
Oh, no. It's there's a problem with the line. There's a problem with the line. That's all there is to it. But he's back again.
Yeah.
See, he's back again. See, yeah. No worries, man. It's all good. Aaron's all worried. Oh, no, Blog Talk Radio's screwing up here. Well, you know, there's a lot of things Blog Talk Radio does. But, you know, I don't think that's one of them. You know, if I can't phone you, I can't phone you at all.
Right.
It does have that kind of problem. Like, they do have some glitches that are really, to say the least, frustrating. But anyway, let's get back to the games that were played, and let's run through the games. And we talked about the Rock, very frustrating game at Rexall Place, losing 11-10. Anytime you lose by a goal, that's not a good thing. But anyway, regardless of that, then the Rock,
went to Calgary the next night.
Yeah, they went to Calgary the next night, and I'm trying to get it to come up, and here we go. But anyway, let's go with Rochester. We're at the Colorado Mammoth, and they won 11-9 at the Pepsi Center. Colorado, we've been talking about, Rocco, the Colorado team is kind of a disappointment. We kind of expected more from this team this year, and they've really had trouble getting their heads above water. Rochester's a great team, don't get me wrong, and this isn't the game that I'm using as an example of them not being very good or not as good as they could be. You know, Colorado's, I think they've got a lot more talent than they're showing. But the Nighthawks, let's face it, they're the defending champs. They won 11-9. Colorado made it close. Your opinions on this game, buddy? Rocco?
Well, you know, Colorado's been, like you said, they've been up and down all year. Again, their goaltending. In the very beginning of the year, they weren't sure which way they were going. Are they going to stay with Ty Bellinger, or are they going to go with Dylan Ward? The first 6 games, Bellinger was yanked out of every single game, and Dylan Ward came in. Two or three of those games, he got saddled with the loss after he came in, helped the team battle back by stopping every possible thing coming his way, but yet he still got saddled with the loss. Now he's been the go-to guy in net. So they got 2 young goaltenders. Between the two of them, I mean, Bellinger played, I think, 6 games last year. In his, you know, in his rookie year, and this is Dylan Ward's rookie year. So, you really got 2, you know, fresh out of the water goaltenders on that team. But when you let go of Gavin Prout on that team because of the salary cap reasons, that they're a set of big shoes to fill. And also you didn't have Casey Powell in the beginning of the year. Now you got Casey Powell back and you got Drew Westerveld out there. Things are starting to click with them a little bit.
Unfortunately, Aaron? Adam Jones is missing for a couple of games right now, so that's also he was the league's leading scorer up until about three games ago. Is he Bronco, do you know if he's injured? I thought he was for some reason.
He is injured, but I don't know what the extent of the injury is.
Yeah.
I know he is out. I believe he was put on the 21-day DL.
Okay.
So if he's going to be coming back, he would be coming back this weekend. He would be eligible to come back. But I don't know what the severity of it all is. But, without him in the lineup, that's a big part.
Yeah.
So Colorado – I'm sorry, Aaron. Go ahead.
I was going to say Rochester actually got a big game out of Stephen Keough. I've been trying to line him up to get him on the show. And Casey Powell and John Grant seem to be clicking along rather nicely. Casey Powell had 5, John Grant had 4 points in that game, and Drew Westerveld had 4. So those guys seem like they're coming alive. On the Rochester side of things, like I said, Stephen Keough had a huge game. Dan Dawson was consistent with 4 points, and Paul Dawson and Brad Self both had 3 each. I mean, we can see it's all being relatively evenly distributed, the scoring at least, amongst some of the players. I don't know. I mean, this game was good as far as I'm concerned. It was awesome. You know, I thought Colorado might have been able to pull it off. That was, you know, they just needed a little bit of a decent run, and they could have pulled this one off.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard to get that kind of a run, especially against a Rochester team.
Yeah.
You got Matt Vince in net, only allowing just over 8 goals a game. I mean, you look at him, you say, oh, my God, he's only letting up 8 goals.
Yeah, that's huge.
Right, but now, I mean, not to go with the Rochester game, but then you say, oh, yeah, that's great, 8 goals a game. Well, Aaron Bowles only letting up 7.9, I think, a game. So it's like, okay, yeah, he's number 2, Bold's number 1 with, like, you know, in the 7 area.
Honestly, I'd love to see these two play in the Champions Cup final. I think a
rematch for it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would be huge.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, you mentioned Paul Dawson.
Yeah.
Okay. Other than Stephen Keough having the 5 goals for Rochester last week, Paul Dawson was the only other one with a multiple goal game.
This is true. Everything else was singles. I mean, Campbell
single
had
goals.
McCurdy
he had 2
had
goals.
One, Self and Dawson, but Dan had only 1. So, I mean, if you remove Stephen Keough from the mix, then the Rochester Nighthawks, last week at least, were in trouble.
Well, yeah, you could say that, but when you look at their stats, okay, you look at their stats up and down the line, you got Keough and Jameson with Jameson has 19 and Keough has 17 goals, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody else, Johnny Palace, Palace, Dawson, McCready, and even Joe Walters, they all have 9. And then you got Corey Vittorelli with 7. So they have 4 or 5 other guys that are going to be reaching that double-digit plateau. So they're very well balanced, but Keough and Jameson are the 2 go-to guys right now.
Yeah.
How important is it to have balance in your lineup?
It's very important. It's very important in this league because what a lot of teams, I'll use the Wings for example, what a lot of teams were doing in the beginning of the year, they were double teaming on Crowley. Kevin Crowley hasn't been scoring. He's just started scoring a lot as of late. In the beginning of the year, he was struggling beyond all belief. He couldn't, you know, buy a goal in the beginning of the year. You know, now he's up to, I believe, somewhere, 11 or 12 goals right now. But you're looking at, you know, them, the other team saying, well, we're going to let the Kyle Buchanans and the Jordan Halls and, you know, players of that, you know, beat us, not, you know, Kevin Crowley. We'll double and triple team Crowley if we have to, and we'll let the other guys, you know, have to beat us. And that's what they started doing. I mean, Buchanan and Hall have 16 and 19 goals. Veteran Tracy Kolesky, 17 goals. He's having a standout year for the Wings so far. And Crowley has 14. So, you know, Kevin just started putting that ball in the net again. But they said, you know, if you're going to beat us, you know, the other guys are going to have to do it. The Pat Saunders, the Ryan Wards, and like I said, the Jordan Halls.
And that isn't that easy.
No. I mean, like, you know, you saw, like I said, the first game against Buffalo, they, you know, put a solid effort out and, you know, all the other guys are scoring. But now if they start to struggle, they need to go to their big guns. And that, and the big gun there is Kevin Crowley. And if he's not scoring, what do you do?
You
know,
hope
if the other
for
guys
a lot.
Aren't, you know, yeah, it hurts. Yeah, I mean,
no,
you can't rest.
It's difficult to say the best.
Yeah, I mean, you can't rest the whole thing just on him. But, you know, if he's not putting the ball in the net, they know he's going to be forcing the shot, squeezing the stick harder. They can start D'ing up on the other players.
Mm-hmm. And end up with a better, you know, a better look as far
but, yeah,
as...
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, when you watch the teams working the ball around, you know, it's so, the technique involved is at times so subtle, and you know, it looks like basketball, exactly the same. The difference is that in basketball you can't really block a guy from going to the basket. In lacrosse, it's a requirement. So, you know, the fake shots and the some of the fancy shots we're seeing last year in the playoffs, you know, the ones from behind the net, that seems to be the one this year that everybody's trying to master is the shot from behind the net. What do you guys think of that new move that all the teams are trying out there now?
Well, that's been around for a while.
But it seems recently they're trying it more and more. I don't know whether it's because I watch The Rock more than any other team and whether it's a weakness for Rose. You know, it seems to me that they try that an inordinate amount of times against him in particular. Aaron?
No, it seems to me that Rose has a problem sealing off the crossbar. One of the goals that was scored on him the other night, you could see his right arm actually popped off the crossbar, which is why the player managed to squeeze it in. So I'm just wondering if maybe that's something he might need to work on or take a little extra rotation to practice for. I'm not 100% sure about that. I do know Minnesota used it to great effect in the playoffs last year, and they used it during the home game to help pull themselves more even with us. It's a variation of the air gate, and it's kind of getting frustrating to keep seeing them put them in that way.
Either way, it works. It works for players, for some more than it does others. The big move. What would be the best and description of how they put the goaltender out of position? In your opinion, guys, like what makes a goaltender have trouble with players? You know, what are the players trying to do when it comes to getting their shot on net and making sure that they have an opening to go for?
So I think the one that's most commonly referred to is what's called low posting. That's where you'll have a player station himself just off the crease. Trying to make the goaltender go from post to post very quickly is difficult. Even for me, and I'm not the fastest guy in the world, but I'm not the slowest guy either. Going post to post, when you can't slide like a hockey goalie, is very difficult. So they'll have a player up by where the normal hockey faceoff dot is, and he'll zip it into the guy that's standing on the low post, and they'll try to put it past you that way. The biggest hurdle and the biggest thing that you have to try to do to get goalies to move is to go side to side on them. So
and the side to side. As a defender, the part that I find most difficult for the defenders is when the other team works their way into the middle. And it seemed to me, you know, once you get to the middle, if they can get that guy going in the middle and you know, the double pass, that kind of stuff, where the goaltender now, when you're in close on the goaltender, that's when it gets even more difficult for the goaltender to stop the ball.
Exactly. I mean, it's one thing to send it from side to side up in the, you know, up on the blue line or up on the restraining line. It's another thing to be moving it side to side close in on the goalie. And it's those passes across the crease or from just outside the crease to the corner of the crease that make it difficult for goalies to stop it. It's unfortunately the recurring trend that I've noticed here is that the Rock don't really have a tendency to do that. They're always trying to bullet right up the middle. You know, I mean, the times that Casey Behrens does have success, it is because he's going low post on them. But it doesn't happen as often as obviously I'd like to see it happen. So, what can you do? But it is something that they'll need to work on and they'll need to improve.
Now, we're here with the guy who does Philadelphia, and I noticed that Philadelphia didn't play last week.
No, they had a bye week last week, so they got the weekend off. It's the same thing for Toronto this week. Toronto doesn't have a game this coming weekend.
And what people like, the main reason why you end up with a bye week after playing two games in 1 week is because you're playing. When you end up in a region that has two teams, you play those two teams on the weekend. I realize that's, you know, what they do, but that's got to be tough playing that second game. Rocco, has it always been like this, where the teams play more than one game a weekend?
Well, it's been that way recently, and it's mainly because of arena availability. When you look at the teams in the National Lacrosse League, they're like the redheaded stepchild. They're low mm-hmm. main on the totem pole. Here in Philadelphia, to give you an example, you got to do the Wings schedule after the Flyers schedule comes out in the NHL, the Sixers schedule comes out for the NBA. Then you have your local college teams that may have some games at the Spectrum. Listen to me, at the Wells Fargo Center with Villanova playing there a few times. Then you have your monster truck rallies. You have your Disney on Ice. Whatever concerts are there. So you look at arena availability, who's playing at what time. If there's a hockey game at 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon and it's televised on NBC, on the national broadcast channel, you can't have another event after that. It's in a TV contract that you can't have another sporting event going on that day. So,
well, because they got to take it apart, right?
Yes. Well, no. For hockey, all they got to do to change from hockey to lacrosse is lay the turf down. That's really it. That's all they really have to do. But it's something when in the NHL television contract where if there's a nationally televised game, like on NBC when they have their hockey days going on, you know, after the All-Star games, they don't allow other teams to have a sporting event after them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why, but it's just, you know, and like I said, when you're low man on the totem pole, you know, you don't have that many open dates as compared to, let's say, the Rochester Nighthawks.
I would have thought it had something to do with the TV, you know, the TV stuff that they're doing, and they want to take it apart, and they need that extra time to do so. But if that's not the case, that's not the case. That's amazing. It truly is.
Yeah, it all goes by arena availability.
Well, we have the same thing here with the Canadian Football League, where you know we have to wait till all the schedules are put together, and then they have the luxury of you know, like you said, low man on the totem pole. They take the dates that are left. That's the mm-hmm. way it is. But regardless, it's got to be tough for these guys to play two games in 1 weekend. I mean. You know, it's got to be tough. And how do they overcome it?
You know what? They're professionals. I was listening to another show earlier tonight where they had Jordan Hall on, and the question was brought up to him. It's something that you learn to do from playing, you know, the game your whole life. You play in tournaments where you play two or three games a day when you're a kid to playing, you know, in college or playing in it, you know, in a Quebec Junior League or, you know, anything like that. You will play two games a week or, you know, two games in 2 days or, you know, what have you. You just got to you know, you get back to the hotel room or whatever, you get your shower, you get some food in you, you hit the bed, pull the covers over you, get a good night's sleep, get up the next day, see the trainer, ice here, whatever, and then just get yourself ready to go again and just go hard again. That's what you have to do.
It's definitely tough. So the Nighthawks beat the Mammoth, and the Rock lost to the Roughnecks. Aaron, this was the game that you were referring to, that the first quarter began with a 7-0 lead for Calgary.
Oh, yeah. This was the game. This was the game that kind of made me regret going to the Squire and Firkin, but thankful that they had beer.
That night it was the Firkin Squire.
The Squire and Firkin, yeah. When the other team scores 8 seconds into the game, you know it's going to be a long night. When they follow that up 2 minutes later with a second goal, you know it's going to be an even longer night, especially seeing as that goal happened on the power play. The Toronto Rock got a holding penalty a minute and 18 seconds in, and it took Calgary another 51 seconds to capitalize on that. So, yeah. And then they closed it out with two goals in the last 4 minutes. As a matter of fact, 3 of the 7 goals in the first quarter were power play goals.
Wow.
Yeah, it was Curtis Dixon, Dane Dobby, Curtis Dixon, Jeff Shatler, Curtis Dixon. Are you seeing a pattern here?
Yeah, it sounds like they were all, you know, Calgary players.
Yeah, there was a minor bit of hope at the start of the second quarter when got a goal a minute 15 in. But then Calgary turned around with 2 goals in 6 seconds. Toronto got an answer back from Stephon LeBlanc at the 3-minute mark, but then Dane Dobby and Matthew Dinsdale kicked in 2 goals within 25 seconds of each other at 4:11 and 4:36, and you knew the rut was on at that point. You know, you were kind of hoping that the goalie would have been pulled about 4 goals ago.
Do you think it was Rose had a bad night?
Not to put too fine a point on it, he crapped the bed. The defense was soft, allowing incredible penetration by Calgary. Nobody was taking the body. It's almost like they thought to themselves, you know, we did okay against Edmonton last night. We only lost by one. I'm going to put my feet up. And that was all it took. And Calgary never let up. They had their foot on the gas the entire way. They got 7 goals in the first quarter, 7 goals in the second quarter, had a hiccup in the third, but then got another 4 in the fourth. Toronto never really threatened. We were being doubled at so many different points in that game. I think the closest we actually made it was 15-11, and that was at the start of the fourth quarter when Casey Behrens potted a power play goal. And honestly, that was about it. Very, very few bright spots in that game. I mean, Garrett Billing had five points. Stephon LeBlanc had 5 goals and 2 assists. Casey Behrens had 2 goals and 4. But you look on the other side, you look at Sean Evans for Calgary, had 1 goal and 7 assists. Curtis Dixon had 6 goals and 4 assists. Dane Dobby had 4 goals and 2 assists. And Jeff Shatler had an 8-point game. It just seems that Calgary wanted it more. And the only other explanation I can think of is they love getting up for Toronto because Mike Poulin used to play for the Rock, and they got rid of him. Jeff Shatler's a Toronto boy. The only thing I can think of is that they really get up for these sorts of games because they're playing guys from home. But it was horrible, Frank. I'm kind of glad you weren't there.
Well, I was totally not available. That's, you know, it's almost like the guy upstairs said, Frank, I'm going to catch you a break. I'm going to keep you real busy so you don't go. Because the man upstairs kept me busy, and we don't have a second floor here. So I don't mean anyone in particular other than the guy that's way up in the sky. I'm kind of glad I didn't see that game. It sounds like it was the way they played at the end of the game against Minnesota. And, you know, but let's not take credit away from Calgary. Their team has done a great job of building up their team. You know, they had a bit of a slow start this season. Rocco, they've really started to gel, and they're a very aggressive team, and now their timing's a little better on their aggression, and they're, you know, on their, you know, the way they hound the ball, you know. It's their asset, and they're doing a great job at it.
Yeah, Calgary is a team that you're going to really have to watch when the playoffs roll around. They're a strong team. They obviously, like Aaron said, they get up for playing Toronto, considering that last year Toronto beat them in both games, both times they met last season. But also, Calgary facing a team on back-to-back nights when both, like in Toronto's case, they were at Edmonton. Now they're coming into the Saddle Dome. That's like dangling raw meat in front of a hungry lion. Calgary's going to feast on that. They know that they were in, that Toronto was in a battle the whole entire game. So they're going to come right on out. And just like you said, they put the pedal to the metal and kept it going full force, which is something I was trying to find a reference to what the Wings should have done against Minnesota when they opened up that 7-3 lead and lost that game, and where Toronto kind of gave up the 13-4 lead, but they still ended up winning. Those two teams need to do what Calgary did this past weekend. Just keep on going, 60 hard minutes. They give you a chance to, you get the ball, shoot it, put it in.
That,
don't just run
the
30 out.
The lack of killer instinct.
Right.
Not to put too fine a point on it, it's
yeah.
kind of like you're dealing with a neutered offense at points. They just don't seem to be willing to put everything into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on my end, I thoroughly enjoyed the game. I enjoyed it because that those two losses just kept the Wings in a battle for that final playoff spot.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about that. We talked about this weekend, this past weekend, being the, you know, the do-or-die weekend for the Rock, you know. And I think Philadelphia is more than alive. I think the Rock are in trouble, and they need to make some moves. They got to do something. They lack aggressiveness. And, you know, like I said, for the times that I covered and did play-by-play for lacrosse decades ago, it's always been about aggression, and you have to be aggressive. And I find the Rock too laid back. And, you know, and this is what happened with Minnesota when they came into Toronto. They were laid back, and Toronto had their way with them. And then once Minnesota decided, you know, we're going to turn this into a game, their aggressiveness paid off. And you need to be aggressive in the game of lacrosse. Once you take your foot off the gas, the other team's going to have lots of room to, you know, to put their foot on the gas and let it rip.
Well, hopefully with the bye week this week, Toronto will have a chance to sit back, lick their wounds, do some evaluating, and figure out what went wrong. So
yeah,
you know, I mean, this could be. I mean, even though they're not playing, this could potentially be a very big week for them. This could be a very, very big weekend for them. So, I mean, what we've got coming up this weekend, we've got Swarm and the Bandits. We've got the Wings versus the Nighthawks. We've got the Roughnecks versus the Mammoth and the Stealth versus the Rush. That's a jam-packed weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun lacrosse watching, but at the same time, the Bandits have an opportunity to put themselves even further in front of the Rock. The Swarm have a chance
Let's be specific and look at the standings, Aaron, instead of jumping ahead. Let's not jump
that far ahead.
That's okay. You know, let's look at the standings, and then we'll talk about the games that are coming up. So what happened this past week, weekend, and what it did was it gave the Buffalo Bandits a half-game lead over the Rochester Nighthawks. The Bandits are at 6-2, the Nighthawks at 6-3. Both those teams are a little more comfortable in first and second place, and the comfort now for the Toronto Rock, the only word to use is discomfort, because right now you've got the Toronto Rock at 4-6, the Philadelphia Wings at 3-7. So, you know, they're only a game behind the Toronto Rock. And not that Philadelphia should feel comfortable that all they got to worry about is the Rock. The Swarm are only one game, half a game behind them and a game and a half behind Toronto. So, you know, the Swarm, if they figure things out because of the five teams in that division, there's a great chance that, you know, any of these three teams, the last three teams in the East Division, Toronto, Philadelphia, Minnesota, could end up in the playoffs. I think it's going to be kind of hard to overcome Rochester and Buffalo. I just think they're that strong. Rocco, in the Eastern Division, your team, Philadelphia, You're in the middle of the playoff race, if you will, if you count that third game, right in the middle.
Yeah, well, the problem, you know, you're talking about the three teams, Toronto, Philly, and Minnesota.
Yeah.
If Minnesota can find a way to beat somebody else other than Philadelphia, they might be able to move up in the standings.
Right.
The only two wins they have are over the Wings, and that's the downside to the Wings right now at 3-7. They lost the tiebreaker to Buffalo, and they lost the tiebreaker to Minnesota. And they've played Rochester and Toronto both one time apiece, and they lost both of those games as well.
So this weekend's
game against Rochester, they lose that. That'll be losing the tiebreaker to Rochester, which leaves Toronto left. And we would need to win the final two meetings against them to win that tiebreaker. So they're not making it easy on themselves.
No, but and the reason you're referring to the tiebreaker, that because they play so few games, and you know, the odds of being tied at the end of the season are very high.
Well, yeah, and considering that you play each team in your division three times, some of them, in Buffalo and Rochester's case, they play each other four times this year. But, you know, Philly plays Toronto, Rochester, Buffalo, and Minnesota three times each.
Right.
So you want to win two out of three in case you end up with the same record. The first tiebreaker is head-to-head.
Right.
So you want to be able to have that.
And the odds on finishing with the same record are much higher than they are for a league that plays 80-plus games or 160 games.
Oh, yeah, back in 2008, the Wings, Buffalo, Rochester, and Toronto all ended up 10-6. Wings ended up in fourth place because they lost the tiebreaker to Buffalo, Rochester, and Toronto.
And you don't want to see that right now.
No, and what ended up happening, it cost them a home game.
There you go.
They had to go on the road. So even though you have the same record, you lost the tiebreakers to those teams. And that dropped you from the one seed down to a four seed.
Let's look now at the Western Division, a division that has fluctuated, that has not been consistent, other than the most consistent team in the league. Of course, when you're 8-0, consistency is, you know, what you're doing. You're not losing. That means you're very consistent. Edmonton's at 8-0. The Calgary Roughnecks are at 6-3. The Colorado Mammoth are at 4-7. And the Vancouver Stealth close behind at 3-7. So you've got a two-team battle for the final playoff spot. Vancouver was in great shape the way the season started. They have faltered a lot. What's been their downfall, do you think, Rocco?
You know what? I to be honest with you, I think releasing Dean Hill and Ethan Iannucci because of the salary cap hurt them drastically because now you're just relying on Lewis Ratcliffe and Reese Dutch to be your two main people. They got rid of Kyle Buchanan. He was a rookie last year. He only played a handful of games. You could see what he's doing with Philadelphia. You know, maybe you know some of their moves to save money here. You know, pinch a few pennies there. That hurt them. I mean, they were two and one at one point, or 2-2.
Yep.
They were sitting pretty, and then they lost five in a row.
That's
and
right.
And some of those games that they lost were not one or two goal games. They were getting blasted 19-9 in a couple of them. And they just started, you know, falling apart, and Colorado started, you know, to kind of, you know, come to life once, you know, Casey Powell signed his contract.
How about you, Eric?
Somebody poked the fuzzy elephant is what happened. And Colorado finally realized if something doesn't happen soon, we could be in trouble. Now, I know with Vancouver, they've got Digby and Smith in there as well in between Ratcliffe and Dutch. So, I mean, they have some additional scoring punch in there. Brett Bucktooth, I know, only played three games. In those three games, he had 10 goals. Like if some of these players started performing the way that you know that they can, this could be a very, very dangerous team. I mean, they went to the finals 2 years in a row against the Rock. So, I mean, they're not that far behind.
They're only a game and a half behind Colorado.
The problem that you get here is in between Colorado and Colorado and Edmonton, or Calgary and Edmonton, sorry. because, you know, you've got that one perfect team in your division. That's kind of a tough thing to get around.
Yeah, but right now all you have to do, if we learned nothing else last year in the playoffs, it isn't a single-game knockout this year like it was last year. But, you know, the playoffs are a time of year when there can be upsets. You know, fortunately for the favored teams at the end of this year, it isn't going to be one and done. You know, the other team's going to have to beat you twice. So,
yeah, the
you know,
Toronto Rock are going to have to suck for two games in a row in order to get put in the playoffs this time.
Yeah, but they got to make the playoffs. And the way they're headed right now, Aaron, I'm not sure that they're going to. They've had a...
Go ahead, Rocco.
The thing is with the playoffs, the first round is a single-game elimination. The top three
make... Wild card seeding, yeah.
Yeah, the top three make it in each division. So let's just say if it finishes right now with Edmonton, Calgary, and Colorado, Colorado would travel to Calgary, single-game elimination. After that, the winner of that, when they play Edmonton, that's a two-game series with a possibility of a 10-minute game if the team split.
Yeah, what I was referring to, that finishing first this year, you don't end up behind the eight ball the way Toronto did last year, finishing first.
Right.
But, yeah, you're right. The second and third, one game, one and done for the second and third place teams. So that makes it really difficult, you know, to finish second. You really don't want to finish second if you're Rochester. So, you know, and in the case of Calgary, Colorado, and Vancouver, you know, can Calgary catch Edmonton? Well, you know, Calgary's played nine games. Edmonton's only played eight. You know, if they lose that one extra game, it's only two losses difference, and there's still a little bit of time left in the season. It's quite possible. But you want to finish first just to make sure that, you know, you get the best chance to win. Because that first game, you get to play that first game on the road where all the pressure's on the home team. And then you come home, and in case you, you know, don't play that well, you've still got that 10-minute game after that. So, you know, you want to finish first. And Buffalo and Rochester are giving it their best to decide who's in first. Calgary is going to make it close. I'm not sure that Colorado is going to make it close. Who do you guys think right now, the way they're playing, if you look at it now, who do you think will finish first? Is everything the way it is right now, or do you see a little bit of momentum by somebody who's not first at this point?
Unless Edmonton fire sales it and completely dynamites themselves, chances are good that they're going to be the ones that are going to end up first in the Western Division. As for the Eastern Division, my money is still on the Bandits. Those guys, they're really bought into Cordingley's system right now. They're really playing well. I have a feeling, and with Cosmo playing the way he is, they're the odds-on favorites to end up in first in that division.
Which means you get a great shot to make it to the final.
Yep.
Rocco?
You're talking about Edmonton and Calgary. They still got to play each other three more times.
And there it is.
They face each other three more times. They face each other again March 14th in Calgary. Then after that, they play Then they play April 12th and April 19th before, you know, the week before the season ends. So they still got three more games against each other. So that could sway the standings, because when they first met, it was in the beginning of the year. It was the third game of the season when they played.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, Calgary's getting on a little bit of a roll. I think they're going to make it a lot closer than what it is right now. But I still see Edmonton coming out on top in the division. I see Colorado and Vancouver fighting for that last spot.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that and the team that wins better be ready for Calgary, because they are getting better every week.
Yeah, and then, you know, Edmonton stays in first. They're going to be playing Calgary two more times on top of the four that they played during the regular season.
They're going to get to know each other.
Very much, yes. Now, when you look at the East, the way things are going right now, yeah, you could easily say Buffalo's going to win the division. Last two games of the year, Buffalo and Rochester. They face each other the final two games of the year against each other. April 19th, they're in Rochester, and then April 26th, the last day of the season, they're at the First Niagara Center. These teams are only separated by half a game right now. Those two games are going to decide who gets first place.
Totally, totally. Or at least who's going to have the inside track.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just way too close to call right now. You look at Buffalo's schedule coming up. They got Minnesota this week. Then they're home against Colorado. Then they go on the road for three games. They got Edmonton, Minnesota, and Vancouver on the road. Then they come home to face Calgary. So they have a couple tough games in there.
Yeah, they're going to be in tough.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it's going to be between Buffalo and Rochester for that top spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it wouldn't surprise me.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah, if they have the same record, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
And then the tiebreaker becomes a factor, and yada yada yada, and it's going to be interesting to see the least.
Well, the thing is, I think, like I said, they play each other four times, so I think that the head-to-head, I think, goes out the window if they end up tied or. Because not everybody in the East plays each other four times. They only play each other three times.
Mm-hmm. Because of the extra team.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because of the extra team. Well, let's look at the 8th, Saturday the 8th, our first game we're looking at. We've heard a little bit of insight into the games that are coming up at the First Niagara Center in Buffalo. The Buffalo Bandits will be visited by the Minnesota Swarm. It's an opportunity for Minnesota to show that their record is not for real, that they're better than their record shows. And, what better way than to come and play well against Buffalo? I don't like their chances. Buffalo's too consistent a team. They got the goaltending. Vince's goaltending Cosmo's goaltending is very consistent. And, like Vince's is in Rochester, really two of the better goalies in the East, at least, anyway. What do you think, Rock?
I see Buffalo in a runaway in this game. I really do. Cosmo is on his game. They're playing at home. Tavares is on his game. Steinhaus is on his game. Dane Smith is just second year in the league. He's playing like he's been in the league for at least 6-7 years. And Minnesota doesn't know right now which way is up as far as their goaltending. Either it's Tyler Carlson or it's Zach Higgins. The same thing they went through the past 3 years when they had Carlson and Kirk. They didn't know who to stay with, who was the hot goalie.
And Carlson was unbeatable in the game against the Rock last year in the playoffs.
Yes.
He was unbeatable.
And now you don't know which way is up. And they don't have that, I guess you could say, high-profile guy, their big scorer.
Yep.
Ryan Benesch was signed by Buffalo. I mean, their main guys now are Calum Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a bunch of second-year players. You got Kyle Matisse. You got Shane Jackson, Brock Sorensen, and you got rookie Logan Shush. But they're just getting their feet wet, those guys, all except for Crawford. You don't have that other go-to guy when you had Benesch on that team.
I really believe that they need the Rock, if they can trade for Carlson, his stock has dropped quite a bit since the playoffs last year. I just can't see them. I don't see why they don't make that trade. Teams need sometimes a wake-up call, and I don't think there's a team in the league right now that needs more of a wake-up call than the Rock. And a trade like that, Carlson's a local boy from Brampton. I don't know. From what I saw him in that championship game, Aaron, you remember the game. It was a total embarrassment for the Rock.
Oh,
was it the Rock that was terrible? Was it the Rock that were terrible that day, or did he actually look like he had some ability and was able to play a big game in a big game?
I think it was the fact that the Rock couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a bucket of water in that particular game.
All right, so they made him look
really
good, you think?
Go ahead, Frank.
So you think, no, I was just saying, so you think they made him look good? They made Carlson look good?
Well, I mean, you've got to have skills in order to play in the National Lacrosse League. Don't get me wrong. I think that the Rock may have helped him look phenomenal as opposed to really good.
Well, I still maintain that the team doesn't play well defensively in front of Rose, and and they need a wake-up call. The team needs a wake-up call. So Minnesota could help him out that way and give Rose another chance, maybe in Minnesota. I don't know.
Yeah, but you also have to realize one thing there, though, Frank.
Go ahead.
Talking about trade maybe Carlson coming into Toronto. You got to look at the salary cap.
All right.
There's a salary cap. Team goes over $400,000, they get hit with a luxury tax.
Yep. But isn't Rose higher paid than Carlson?
Most likely he is. So now, let's just say, okay, you trade Rose for Carlson.
Right.
You send Rose to Minnesota. That might be putting Minnesota over the salary cap.
And you send a guy who's worth a little bit of money that makes the difference. Because I really believe
that's the whole thing. They're not going to give up any of their youth. Minnesota is rebuilding.
Yeah, they've got a boatload of draft picks this year.
Yes, and they're building and they're centering it all around Logan Schoesch and four first-round picks last year, another four this past draft, and I believe they got a couple more coming up. So
yeah,
they're building for the future. And yeah, I mean, if they can get a goalie like Nick Rose, hey, yeah, but they're not going to give away any of their draft picks or anything like that.
No, I wasn't expecting a draft pick. I was expecting The Rock to send, Rose and maybe take some salary as well as the goaltender. Since they're looking to, I'm not saying that Minnesota's trying to unload salary, but they're not worried about some of the players. With all the draft picks that they've got, a lot of them are going to want to fit into the lineup, no?
Yeah, and I think that's what they're doing. They're getting the young players that are hungry and they want to play, and that's what they're getting with who they have, with Shane Jackson and picking up Logan Schoesch and Kiel Matisse, Brock Sorensen, Alex Krepnicek.
Yep.
Getting that the youthful guys and even Zach Higgins.
They're both Toronto and Minnesota are in the same boat in one particular way. Minnesota doesn't care about chemistry right now. And that's all Toronto has, is to believe in, to get some chemistry going. And all that Minnesota's thinking about is putting together a good young team. And then worry about the experienced guys, like you said, that they have already. And then fill in after the draft and figure out what they need after the draft or the drafts, But Toronto has a problem with chemistry, and I don't like what I'm looking at. And it's really tough to win when the team is not playing like a team. And that is a team that's distracted, too inconsistent. As I said before, they're helping Rose look bad. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is, and I don't think it's right. But, it is what it is. They need to change their chemistry if they want to clean up this season, or at least be competitive again on a consistent basis. Aaron, are they injured at all? Are The Rock injured at all?
Well, I know that Pat Merrill actually just went back on the IR, so that's one thing that to bear in mind as well.
Okay,
he just come off it two games ago. But Pat Merrill went back on the IR, and they brought Eric Law back up to the active roster.
So this might not be a good time to make a trade because they might have some key injuries. So Philadelphia, your team, is playing in Rochester, as you said, Rocco. Your team could really use a win here. How do you like your team's chances at the Blue Cross Arena?
You want me to talk as a fan, or you want me to talk straight across the line?
Okay, you know what? You can do both.
I'll give both sides of it.
Yeah, okay. You can.
I'm making the trip up there. I'm leaving on
Friday.
They better
friggin' win.
Yeah, tell me about it. I'm making the trip up there.
Never.
Yeah, well, it's a 5.5-hour trip. And, Aaron, you've been there plenty of times. After the game's over, we're back at the stop. We're drinking. We don't care what happened at that point. But it makes for a long ride home if you lose.
Yeah.
I would like to see them win. I really would. And they can beat this team. But when you look at the past history between the two teams, in the last 12 regular season games, Wings are 1-11 with that win coming last year. Before winning last year on February 23rd, the last time they won in Rochester was back on January 10th of 2009. and we haven't beaten Rochester here in Philadelphia since January 18th of 2008.
Jeez, I didn't think it was okay. That bad.
Yes, wow. It's that bad. Counting the two playoff games, last year and the year before in the playoffs, we are 1-13 in the last 14 meetings against Rochester.
Dang.
1-13. Okay? And here's something else. I looked at all this. I did all this kind of review. Rochester in 2012 and 2013, they were 4-5. Okay? Their goals against were 110 in 2012 and 92 in last season. This year, they're two games better with 6 wins, but have only let up 77 goals total in 9 games. Their defense is on lockdown right now. For the Wings to win this game, they need to capitalize on every opportunity. They get that second and third opportunity, they got to put it in. You know, if you take that first shot, yeah, okay, it may be saved. If it's saved and there's the loose ball, you better pick that up. You better get that loose ball, put it in net, set it up for another shot. You get that second, third opportunity, you need to capitalize. You get power play chances, you need to capitalize on it. They went from having the top power play in the league in the very beginning of the season to having the 6th best power play. And they're the league's worst on the penalty kill.
That's they not helpful.
They let Minnesota go 5-for-5 on the power play in the game that they lost. I think it was like 15-14 the final of that game. If they got done playing Toronto, they let Minnesota go 5-for-5. You let a team go 5-for-5 on the power play, you go 2-for-7, and you lose by 1 goal.
Special what do you blame?
Special teams.
What do you blame?
Yeah, it's the special teams. You're not capitalizing on your power play chances. You're not killing the penalties off.
But that's why I think that, you know, winning faceoffs, you know, I don't mean, you know, I don't want, I'm not, you know, winning faceoffs, converting possessions, all this stuff only becomes relevant if you're ineffective in a certain way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like there's faceoffs don't matter if your power play is doing what it's supposed to do for the most part, your penalty killing is doing what it's supposed to do for the most part, your goaltender's doing what he's supposed to do for the most part, and your defense is doing what they're supposed to do for the most part, as should the offense. It's, you know, it's like juggling balls, right? But when you see a team that can convert but can't play defense, like Toronto, you got to win faceoffs. When you see a team like Philadelphia that can't, that has to find ways to make opportunities for themselves and not give away easy goals, you know, possession and controlling your possession becomes very important, and making that extra effort on a penalty kill or a power play becomes more important for a team like Philadelphia. So it's not about winning a facet of the game, and that facet of the game is the key to winning. It's the difference. It's like you said about the power play and penalty killing. It's not if you're strong in one or the other. It's how well do you do with both, you know, that makes a difference. You know,
and if they could stay within 2 goals of Rochester, they could win this game. They can't let them jump out to 4 or 5 goal lead in the first quarter, because that's what it seems like when Rochester plays against the Wings and that first faceoff happens. It's like boom, boom, boom. Before you know it, you're behind 4-0.
Well, You guys aren't peculiar about that. I mean, the same thing was true against the Rock. Rochester's a team that comes out intense right from the beginning, right from the opening faceoff. They're just intense, and you've got to match their intensity.
Yeah. I mean, and the Wing season lays in the next 3 games. You got Rochester twice, and then Toronto comes to town on March 22nd. So by the time the game's over on March 22nd, the Wings could either be losing all the tiebreakers and could just be almost playing out the string at one point, or, you know, still be in contention.
I think this year is unfortunately going to be the year, not unfortunately, a good thing, where in the Eastern Division it is going to be a battle to the very end. Not so much for first and second, but I happen to think that the weaknesses that both Philadelphia and the Rock have will allow each other to stay in the hunt for a playoff. And if the both of them aren't careful and Minnesota wakes up and they all of a sudden get the kind of goaltending I believe they can get, and if they can play the kind of physical game and you know, basically control the game physically, you know, that both those teams could end up being asleep at the wheel and lose their chance to make the playoffs. I wouldn't want to be Toronto or Buffalo, Toronto or Philadelphia if Minnesota wakes up. Now, that's going to make it really tough.
Yeah, but I don't see Minnesota coming to life. They still have a tough part of their schedule coming up, and they've been struggling nonstop. You know, they haven't won at home all year. But yeah, if they do wake up, they could pose a threat. But then the thing is, you want to know, okay, how much of a threat are they going to actually, you know, pose there? The trading deadline's on the 18th, and then your final roster has to be handed in on the 20th. So you could do all your trades up to the 18th, and then you have 2 days after that to sign players that are out there as free agents that are just sitting at home waiting for their phone to ring.
Mm-hmm.
So anything can happen, you know, at that point. You could see, you know, Toronto pick up, you know, maybe a veteran goalie that's just, you know, sitting at home right now and let, you know, Boychuk go or put him on I'll say it in quotes, the injured list or the physically unable to perform list.
Just to see if they can change things around.
Around, yeah.
Because there's a chemistry thing missing there. And for Toronto, it's the inconsistency that they're playing. I don't think that can be said about Philadelphia. Philadelphia's just been on the cusp of doing well. You've done well enough to be where you are right now, and you know you're just looking for something to get your leg up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Toronto looks great and looks bad in the same game. You know that's to me that consistency is about leadership, and they lack the leadership and or chemistry that will help them to, you know, be more successful. It's amazing how some of these teams, Rochester, Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo, would it be fair to say that Buffalo turned things around rather quickly this year?
Oh, yeah. With Quarterly behind the bench, I think he really laid into the team after the opening game because they haven't looked back since. I mean, yeah, like I said, you know, in the beginning of the show, he said in his press conference, we were outplayed from the moment we walked in the door. We never even got off the bus. We were just completely dominated. And he said, you know, if we want to have anything to say in the league this year, we have to wake up, and we have to wake up now. And damn,
because
they didn't wake up.
They sure did, and they listened to their coach, and that's an awesome thing to have them listen to their coach, I'll tell you.
And a big part is Anthony Cosmo. He's been healthy all year, and I've noticed with other teams diving across the crease, he's not losing his head. In past
he's
years,
keeping
he's
his
diving
cool?
across his crease. He used to lose his cool like it was going out of style. Now he's keeping his cool. Like, he'll give the guy a little shove, but he's not blowing his stack like he used to before. And that, I think, is a very big part.
I think that's coaching, personally.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about the Wings and the Rochester Nighthawks, a game that Philadelphia would like to win. You know, Rochester obviously wants to maintain their availability for winning first. They want to stay there. Now, the Roughnecks are playing Colorado. They can bury Colorado at the Pepsi Center and make it even more difficult for Colorado to make the playoffs. Colorado's been up and down all year. Calgary has become more and more consistent. I really do think that Calgary's going to go in there and win this game, and I think their game is really starting to tune up a bit.
Hey, I got a quick question for you. I got a quick question for you there, Rocco. If I mention three names, will you? If I mention three nicknames, will you remember them?
Try me.
Swoop, King Coil, and The Thrill.
Oh, God. King Coil, you're talking about Pat Coil.
Yeah.
Swoop has to be Dan Stroop.
Yeah.
What was the other name?
Chris is The Thrill Gill.
Gill, yep. You're talking about the three new coaches of the Colorado Mammoth.
Yes, sir, I am.
Yep, former
I was
players.
Back when I saw that, former players for the Toronto Rock. Actually, Pat Coyle later played for the Mammoth. Dan Stroop played for the Vancouver Ravens. I am just jazzed beyond all belief that they're now back in the league. But I think this is – I don't know if this was entirely a necessary change, but it felt it was something they had to do. So
yeah, it was something that they needed to do. I mean, you don't want to say, oh, it looks like the players gave up on Hamley, but they just didn't seem to have that pickup step anymore.
Yeah.
And Coyle, Stroop, Gill, they all know what the games are like against – the Calgary Roughnecks. This isn't going to be an easy game for Calgary.
Mm-mm.
Will not be an easy game. This will go down to the wire.
And now, my real question here is, can they motivate John Grant Jr.?
John Grant don't need any motivation. He knows what needs to be done. I think it's the rest of the guys that really need it. Grant may need a kick in the backside every once in a while. Yeah, to get him back to reality here and there. But if you have him and Casey Powell out there and you give these other guys a little kick in the backside, this is going to come down to a last second, and it's going to be like a last-minute goal that's going to do it, and everybody's going to be sitting on the edge of their seats scratching their head going, did you just see that play that Powell and Grant just did?
It's going to be one of those games where you ask yourself, how come I paid for the whole seat when I'm only using a part of it?
Right. But what the Wings used to do is that their slogan used to be, when they would sell season tickets, we'll sell you the whole seat, but you're only going to need the edge.
And this is going to be one of those games where the edge is going to be the dominant location for you resting yourself.
Yes. It's either going to be a very close game and Colorado's going to come out on top, or Calgary is just going to rip them apart. But I think it's going to be one of them games that is just going to go up and back, because with Coyle, Stroop, and Gill back there behind the bench, knowing what it means right now, you're halfway through the season, you only have a handful of games left, it's a division game, you're at home, you want to win in front of your home crowd, there's a lot of pride there for this Mammoth team, because they are the second oldest team in the league, franchise-wise.
Because mm-hmm.
they started when the Philadelphia Wings started. They just got moved from city to city.
Yes.
So they have a lot of pride, especially with Steve Govert as their general manager. He's a former Philadelphia Wing. So he knows what it means to have that pride.
And Rocco, when you bring in new management, you know, that first game back, the guys are pumped.
Yes.
Guys, that's the best game you play of the first few that you play under a new coach,
in my opinion. Not only are they pumped, but they're at home.
Right.
Sometimes you get a new coach and you're on the road. You got new coaching staff and you're at home.
Yep, and they're going to be pumped.
Yes. So Calgary knows they're going to be in for a battle. It's not going to be like last week when Calgary went up and down against Toronto. It's not going to be anything like that. Nothing at all.
It's going to be one of those games where I'm sure or I believe what's going to happen is that the Colorado Mammoth are going to come out strong, and Calgary's going to have to if for them to win big, like you say, what's going to happen is that Colorado's going to shoot their bolt early. And if Calgary's allowed to counterpunch and score a few extra goals in the counterpunch, because Colorado's going to be fired up, no doubt about it. There's no doubt that they're going to be fired up. And I agree with you that it could be a big loss or a tight win for Colorado. And it's all going to be what happens in that first quarter.
It's all going to be what happens in the face-off circle, too. Look who the face-off men are.
Mm-hmm. This from a guy who said face-offs aren't that important.
No. I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's going to make a difference. You're going to have some battles at the face-off dot. It's not going to be where, you win it, you get the possession. There's going to be a battle there. You're going to be seeing, I wouldn't surprise me one bit, 10 to 15 second face-off draws going on.
And even if you win the face-off, you probably won't end up with the ball.
With the ball, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I mean about the face-off, what's lacking with the Rock, is that you get that intensity that the face-off, generates, You need that. You need that. And it's something that I'm a firm believer of, possession of the ball. If I'm the coach, well, put it this way. If I'm the coach, give me the ball and give me a chance to set up what we're going to do. Because defense is the hardest thing to coach. That's where all the work is, in coaching defense. And defense is not something that guys know, like breathing, Offense is natural. Defense is hard work. And if you have to keep chasing the ball, it's too much work.
Yeah, and Jeff Snyder's not going to be able to just win the faceoff and run down the floor like he did a couple
not
times
clean,
last week.
Yeah. No.
He's going against his younger brother Bobby, but Bobby don't give ground. I mean, he was here in Philly, and I still don't know why we gave him up. I mean, yes, we got Brett Manny, a good defenseman here, but he you see what kind of faceoff guy, Bobby Snyder is. I mean, I love
Absolutely.
Brett Manny being here on the defense. So I mean, it was a good move for Vancouver at the time, and now a really better move for Colorado to get that solid faceoff guy and having the Snyder brothers go at each other. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if the players on the floor are just standing there just watching the face-off battle.
Well, it's one of my favorite things about lacrosse is that when you have family members on the team and then in opposition, it's just amazing how it almost seems like they're meaner to their family members than they are to complete strangers. The rivalry is so intense, just based on playing, not salary or not how much you earn. Just it's like at the root of what the game is all about, and I think that game is going to be the best first quarter of the weekend. Vancouver is going into Rexall Place in Edmonton. They're playing Edmonton. Vancouver earlier in the season looked like a team that could knock off Edmonton. Not so much now, and I don't know that they can right the ship. This probably won't be the night that Edmonton loses their first game. Aaron, I haven't heard from you in a while.
I was going to say no, but I mean, based on past performance, based on the way things have been trending, I don't think the Stealth are going to be able to pull one out against the Rush. They're going to continue with their dominance. I mean, stranger things have happened. Don't get me wrong. I really would like to see Edmonton finally get a loss hung on them, but I don't think Vancouver's the team to do it. Don't make
yeah,
it interesting, but it's not going to be,
I agree with you. How about you, Rocco?
Well, I'm looking at, as Aaron was talking, I'm looking at the schedule. When they last played each other, it was only a 9-8 game.
Yes.
And that was early in the season. It was the fourth game of the season. But I'm hoping that Edmonton's not looking past this game, because on the 14th, they're in Calgary. This is the first of the next three matchups against the Roughnecks that Edmonton has. So they have Vancouver at home, then they go on the road to play Calgary. So you hope that they're not looking past this game and worrying about playing the Roughnecks.
Yeah, it's a gimme trap.
Yes. I mean, there was a couple games that are considered traps. This game with Edmonton and Vancouver, the Buffalo-Minnesota game, because, the way Minnesota's been playing. You've really got to look, because after this game with Vancouver, Edmonton has three to four tough games. You got at Calgary, home against Buffalo, then they're at Rochester and at Toronto back-to-back nights. Saturday the 29th, they're in Rochester. March 30th, they're in Toronto. So they got a strong part of their schedule coming up.
I think it would be nice if they came into here with a clean record there, Aaron, and we can sit in the stands and root the rock into winning the first game that Edmonton loses.
That would be nice.
But mind you, will Edmonton go through the schedule undefeated? I don't think
so.
It's the question of when, that's all.
Vancouver
could surprise them.
They could, but I think they're going to win this game against Vancouver. It's going to be similar to the one they played earlier in the year. It's going to be an up-and-back game. But I see them losing on the 14th at Calgary. I see them losing that game.
That would totally be the resurgence that Calgary's been working towards. It wouldn't be a surprise to me because they have been playing better each and every week. Regardless of whether they won or lost, they've been playing better overall each and every week. In fact, when they played the first game I saw them play this year against Toronto, they could have won that game rather easily. In fact, I think losing it was a bit of a surprise. They really did play a great game. They did everything they needed to do to beat Toronto, and Toronto got off the hook. I don't know, Aaron, if you remember that first game this season.
I do. They kind of dodged it on that one.
They dodged a bullet that night. And I think Calgary's been trying to make up for it ever since. So those are the two. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we'll just have to see what happens and how it all falls out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the good thing about this coming weekend, the March 8th and 9th, is Toronto, they've got a weekend off to rest and recuperate. Pat Merrill has an extra week to try to recover from injury. They've got some guys that they can. They've got some things they can work on for practice, but the next weekend is going to be big because they've got Rochester at Toronto on the Saturday, and then on the Sunday they've got a game against Minnesota in Minnesota. So that's going to be an interesting double up weekend for them. You're going to be lucky in that respect, Rocco, because the Nighthawks will be coming off playing the Rock.
Yeah, but you know what? We had that last time when Minnesota came off playing the Rock, and we still lost to Minnesota.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I mean, I'm not resting my laurels on that one.
The hope here is that Rochester won't be able to score any more goals because they'll have used up all their goals for the weekend against the Rock on the Saturday.
There you go. But I think Minnesota found their game in the fourth quarter against Toronto, and that was the biggest problem that Philadelphia found themselves with, is a team that actually found their game.
I think that may have definitely been the case.
You know, and unfortunately it was one of those things. But then, they'll lose it just as fast. Okay, let's look at the statistics now. We don't have a whole heck of a lot of time. We've got about 17 minutes left, and Garrett Billings of The Rock leads in points, 70. Sean Evans with 59. John Grant with 57. Stephon LeBlanc with 55. And Reese Dutch with 50. Apparently, The Rock has some guys that can put points on the board. Too bad there's no defensive statistic other than the goaltender.
Yeah, it just seems that it's just a couple of guys, though, that are putting up the points for The Rock, because everybody else doesn't seem to be quite where they need to be.
And does that mean that defenses can key on those couple of guys, and when the goals are really necessary, they're not scoring them?
It's entirely possible. I mean, let's be honest here, that the Rock's scoring is a little bit thin. If you look at the top couple of guys that they have for scoring, and I'm trying to get it to frickin' load here, but it's been a pain in the butt.
Garrett Billings, Stephon
LeBlanc.
You know
how that is. The beach ball of doom. But I mean, if you look at the players that The Rock have, they have a couple guys that are really lighting it up, and then you look at the rest of it.
What about the captain?
What
about the captain?
Collins actually not doing all that good. He's back in 15th, I think, in scoring.
You want a little more from him, don't you?
Yeah, he's back in 11th in scoring, and he's got 18 goals and 24 assists for 42 points. I mean, Garrett's got 20 goals and 50 assists for 70, and Stephon LeBlanc has 29 goals and 26 assists for 55 points. But, I mean, there's the gap between the leading scorers on the Rock that's a little bit
concerning. The point I'm trying to make, Aaron, is that the Mammoth as well as the Rock have a lot of guys leading in the scoring, but what we can't see is how the defense is not doing a good enough job for both those teams.
Yeah. No, that's true. They may be getting the scoring up front, but they're deficient on the back end. So,
Rocco, what's your opinion of teams that have players that are leading in scoring and they're not high in the standings? Is that a dead giveaway that defense might be lacking?
Well, you're looking at defense could be lacking, and also that it's not balanced. You don't have balanced scoring going, you know, throughout your whole entire, you know, or at least half of your roster, the guys that should be all kind of balanced out. You know, you look at, you know, Buffalo 6-2, Rochester 6-3, Edmonton 8-0. How many of those guys do you see in the top five?
Hardly any.
You don't see any
exactly.
of them, except for Dan Dawson in assists. Out of those three teams, only Dan Dawson is up there.
My point. I mean,
it's just and you know, like I said earlier, yeah, you got Stephen Keough with 17 goals, Cody Jamieson with 19, and then you look at Johnny Palace, Joe Walters, Dan Dawson, Joe McCready, they all have 9, and then Corey Vitterelli is there at 7. So they got 4 or 5 other guys that are all balanced out and scoring in there. And, of course, their defense is shown with only 77 goals allowed.
And they're doing a great job.
Great job, yeah.
Well, defense is always and will always be, you know, the thing that wins championships. And, you know, leading the scoring sheet doesn't necessarily guarantee anything, you know, as far as precious metal is concerned. Obviously, right now, the problem for some of these teams is they're not playing the team game. We here in Canada had the opportunity to watch a great Olympic hockey team play and sacrifice their own personal goals. And I'm not saying that with tongue-in-cheek and pun intended, I guess, you know, sacrificing their own goals for the team overall goal, which is winning, you know, the gold medal. And this is the difference that you have between the Mammoth and the Rock. The Rock and the Mammoth have guys that are leading and scoring, but the rest of the team is being left behind and not keeping up in a more important facet of the game, which is defense, and or supplying support in scoring when it's necessary for victories. You know, I'm very impressed with Rochester and Buffalo, how they, you know, Rochester, you expected them to come out quick, and you expected the team approach to be adhered to, and they've adhered to it strongly. They've really done a great job of you know, performing the team game behind the backbone that is their goaltender. I mean, let's face it, their goaltender is the best goaltender in the league right now. You know, Buffalo probably has the second best goaltender this year. I don't know if Edmonton's doing it with goaltending. I'm not sure they're doing it with goaltending. I can't even figure out what they're doing it with, because I got to tell you, they surprise me.
Well, I mean, you look at Edmonton, you're talking about the, you know, defensive side of it, and you look at the, you know, the forced turnovers. Kyle Rubish, 18 forced turnovers for Edmonton. That's unbelievable.
And that's a telltale sign.
Yes. And then, you know, Aaron Bold sitting there right now with an 8.25 goals against. And Matt Vincent's an 8.66. So, I mean, you got two of the top goaltenders and two of the top defenses in the league. And they make their defense turn in to offense. They both have great transition games.
And in lacrosse, that's a very important facet of the game.
It's a big part of it. If you don't have at least a half-decent transition game. I mean, you got guys going up on transition on Rochester by the names of Joe Walters and McCready who can put the ball in the net. You got some players that play on transition on other teams that when they take the ball up past the center line, they pull it back and wait for the offense to come on the floor. You can't have that. If you're a transition player and you pick off a pass and you're running down the floor on a possible break, you're hoping that your guy can put it in the net, not pull it back and wait for an offensive player to come out that he can pass it to.
And give the defense a chance to set up.
Right. You need to have that good transition game.
And the when you say transition, you know, changing from offense, from defense to offense, but that transition has to be quick. Because if it isn't quick, then, as I said, the other team gets to set up. And if you hesitate because, you know, you're not a trusted offensive player, then that makes your transition game less effective, less dangerous, and you don't get your opposition on their heels, which essentially is why you want why Edmonton is so successful, is that they get the other team on their heels after they lose the ball. And, it helps to have the other team desperate. And Edmonton has created a lot of situations where they've been very tight and very, systematic and defensive, and they've created a situation where the other team is always desperate and they're not. They can play the patient game, and then when they get the transition, it really hypes up the challenge for the other team. It makes it pretty disheartening when you have a great play in the other end, and then a quick you turn the ball over, and next thing you know, the ball's in the back of your net. You know, it is kind of frustrating, and
or frustrating to the point of when you pick off a pass and you get over the center line, and your coach calls a timeout from the bench
at the wrong time.
Yes.
Well, you know, Aaron, I don't hear you laughing.
Trust me, I'm chuckling.
You are you?
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Aaron, you know, the forced turnovers thing is really important. The shots on goal thing, you know, that's a relative thing. Power play goals, Colin Doyle leads the league with 8, along with Dane Doby, Jeff Shatler, Jordan Hall, and Logan Schuss they follow up. To get a different opinion on the special teams, we talked a little bit about it earlier. The special teams are a very important facet of the game. In what way specifically? We touched on it a little bit earlier, Rocco. Specifically, though, what do the specialty teams do other than the obvious?
Well, you're putting your best offensive players out there on the floor. I mean, you're going to have, two power play units, basically. And they're going to be, your 10 best players. And it's not going to be, the players you had on the first line. You're going to mix them up. So you're going to have guys that were out there basically, on your first set of five and your second set of five, when you're at even strength, they're going to mix them all in together. And you may even have a couple of your transition guys out there on the power play. You want the bigger guys out there, the guys who can, fire the ball and shoot it. Like with the wings, you look at your one unit could be Kevin Crowley, Jordan Hall, Brody Merrill being back there, Ryan Ward, and even you could even put in rookie Garrett Thole from the military academy. He's been playing good in his rookie year, but they'll probably put say Kolesky, Crowley, Ward, Hall, and Buchanan. They could be your five guys. You can mix any combination of those. So you're going to have a lot of offensive power out there. And it's going to have a different look than even strength. But that's what you want out there. And you need to put that ball in the net as quick as possible.
The other thing what it does for me in power play and penalty killing, do the same thing in reverse for both teams. If your power play is effective, you force the other team to be more careful taking penalties. If your penalty killing is effective, you can really, be more aggressive and not fear too much of paying the ultimate price for going over the edge, if you follow what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a part of the game plan, really, the game plan requires that you do well in both power play and penalty killing. Because really, if your game plan involves being very physical with the opposition, allowing power play goals for the by the opposition will just make it difficult for you to maintain that physical edge. So, yeah, power play and penalty killing, to me, are all part of setting up the kind of game you want to play. You need to be successful in both those to have the liberty to be, you know, physical. And you need also to make sure that the other team, if they get physical and get too carried away, you make them pay for it. So, you know, that's why power plays and penalty killing to me are the most important, other than the fact that you get to score a goal or you stop a goal. So, you know, it's a good game changer. Both those can change a game. They can really make a difference in the game. Aaron?
Yeah. Well, there's no denying the importance of special teams and the boost that they can give your team. I mean, when you look at a lot of the statistics, I think you'll find that penalty minutes are down this year, which means that, and we've discussed this before, Frank, that because penalty minutes are down this year, then these power play goals become all the more important and shorthanded goals become even more important.
But yes.
It's the ability that these special teams have to kill off a penalty or even get you points or get you ahead in the game that make them more important. They can provide a boost when your team desperately needs it. A good kill can turn a game around. And on a 5-on-3, a great kill can definitely turn the game around for you. That can be a game changer in and of itself. But
Rocco said earlier, you know, when you have a 9-8 game, a power play or a penalty kill could be the difference.
Exactly. But that's all I got.
That's all you got?
That's all I got.
That's all he's got, Rocco.
He's got.
That's all he's got.
I believe it.
Do you? Okay, look, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I really want to talk about this. Have you guys have played on the same team only, or have you played against each other as well?
We did play against each other this year too.
Yep. Yeah, we did.
So
who were you playing against? I can't remember.
What?
Who were you playing for when I played against you?
The Rage.
That's right.
Yeah, you may have won the game, but you want to tell Frank how our head-to-head battle went?
Not well. I came out on the short end. That's okay. I had an awesome sumo wrestling match with Fat Side.
Yes.
Me and the Buffalo goalie, Frank, put the gloves and met at center floor.
I did what you call a 48-year-old air gate. Ran around behind the net. I came out in front, and I just reached my stick over and put it over his left shoulder.
Yeah.
And you were using the 6-foot stick at that point, right?
No.
No.
like I said, we all got a good laugh out of it, and it's, you know, a charity event. It was all for fun. And like he said, during one game, there was a little sumo wrestling match with him and one of the other goalies. And it was just, you know, fun throughout the whole weekend.
All in good. Hey, here's a question for you, Rocco. Did you get a copy of the game tapes?
Yes.
Would it be possible for you to send me that clip of me and Fat Side wrestling?
That was, when we played.
So that was Spirit and Buffalo. Or did you just get the Philly Rage version?
No. I got them all.
Oh, nice.
I got all four of the game. Well, wait a minute. No, I just got the Rage versions. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll have to talk to Steven then and see if I can't get the Spirit versions. Because I would absolutely love to see me wrestling Fat Side. Because that needs to go on YouTube.
Yeah, because I just got all our Rage games. Because he was supposed to try to get me the Nighthawk game, where me and old goalie went through the back wall.
Okay, guys, we're going to have to leave it there. And the next time there's a fan cup. No, we're running out of time. That's all. That's the only reason. I really look forward to having you on again if you ever have time. You're always welcome here, Rocco. We always enjoy talking lacrosse. Gary Grube, you came at a perfect time. Gary Grube was ill today, and he couldn't be on. We do a threesome, so we maintain the threesome, and I really enjoy the different look that you gave us today. And it's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Yeah, I had a great time. Whenever you need me, Aaron knows how to get a hold of me. And
anytime, my friend.
Yeah,
I'd
be more than happy to jump on.
It's all about the game. Thank you.
All right.
Rocco.
Thanks,
Rocco. Joseph. Hey, your middle name is Joey.
Joseph, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And any relation, by the way?
To
Granato? Tony Granato?
No.
Same last name. Same last name.
Yep.
Have a
great
one, my friend.
All right, you too, guys.
And, you know, for the rest of you that are listening in, thank you for tuning in to Candid Frank Live. This, of course, is Candid Frank Live, National Lacrosse League Talk. We hope you enjoyed it. We're here every Wednesday between 9 and 11 p.m. My cohort, Aaron William Freeland, was here today. Thank you, Aaron. I hope you enjoyed. We didn't talk about how it was in B.C., your little visit in B.C. We'll have to get to that another time.
No worries, Frank.
Okay, have a great one. Good night, everyone, and hope you enjoyed the program. My name is Frank Stanishi. This has been Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in.